thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Java with Josh. I'm your host, legislator Josh Lafazan. Today we have a really exciting show with attorney at law Kyle J. McLaughlin joining us. As we say every week, having big dreams is common, but figuring out how to achieve those dreams is rare. On this show, we interview some truly incredible people to share their journeys to success and to give you the tools to reach your dreams. So grab your cup of Java and let's go. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Two Lafazan appearances in 1 week.
I was going to say, we're keeping you busy over here in District 18. Yes, but for our viewers who don't know you, Kyle J. McLaughlin is a personal injury attorney, criminal defense and traffic attorney with the law firm of Farrow, Kuba, Mangano, who handles cases in all five boroughs of New York City, as well as Suffolk and Nassau on Long Island. He understands that any contact with the legal system can be confusing and frustrating, and he takes the time to provide as much information as possible and to answer all his clients' questions. During his time in law school, Kyle developed a passion for advocating for victims who were seriously injured through no fault of their own. Very impressive, graduated from Toro magna cum laude, Toro Law School, in the top 10 of his class. And upon graduating, you joined Farrow, Kuba, Mangano. And as a litigation attorney, you aggressively represent injury victims, the criminally accused, and you handle an assortment of traffic matters. Additionally, what we're going to get into this is you've launched Kyle the Lawyer as a way for you to bring knowledge of the legal system to the next generation. So obviously you do so much, and I want to take it all the way back here. Bring us to growing up. Did you always know you wanted to be an attorney?
I did not always know I wanted to be an attorney. I kind of had a fondness of the law in general. Kind of where it all started was actually, as you may know, my dad's an attorney. He does, insurance defense work, which means if you're in a car accident, and you get sued, your insurance company is going to hire his firm to defend you. And he's been doing this, since he was young. And I would go into his firm on, vacations or during the summer to kind of file paperwork and stuff. And I end up actually reading the paperwork more so than I would working. Much to his chagrin. And that's where I really kind of, it all started is in his office, those long days doing paperwork and, reading all the different strategy that goes into this type of work and stuff. So I knew, pretty early on that I kind of had a keen interest in the law, whether I wanted to be law enforcement in the law enforcement field or a lawyer, I figured that out in college. I knew from pretty early on that, this is kind of the area that I wanted to be in.
So I think it's super cool. Obviously your father's an attorney, you grew up around the law, and so many of our viewers want to either go to law school or become a lawyer, or they're fascinated by the legal industry. I see you shaking your head. Take us through, what it was like to be in law school and what law school is like. Because I think for so many of us, we don't know what it's like to be in those classrooms.
Yeah. Law school is definitely different. It's different than high school was, it's different than college was, it's a different type of learning, it's a different type of teaching style. Most people who go to law school are familiar with the Socrates method of teaching, basically meaning you're going to get cold called on, in class to give an answer. And if you don't unprepared for that class, you're not only are you embarrassed in front of everyone, but your grade is affected. And usually, there might be a midterm, there might be a quiz or two or a written assignment, but there are some classes where the final is 100% of your grade. You don't have any kind of prep work leading up to the final. So it's definitely was different than college and law school. You really had to stay on top of the work or else you'd find yourself, a week or two before the final needing to teach yourself an entire semester of work, which might work for some people in college and high school, kind of like it did for me, but I really had to, stay on top of everything in law school and make sure I was well prepared, not only for each class, but kind of so I was prepared for the final project, final paper, whatever it might have been. And one thing that I also really loved about law school, especially Toro Law School on Long Island, what they're great at is incorporating, real life experience classes into the curriculum. Now we had a trial practice class with, one of the professor was a renowned Long Island trial lawyer. And we actually got to put on a mock trial. The entire class was kind of structured around a mock trial. And the final assignment was a two-day mock trial. There was a trial team that I was on and different kind of curriculum classes that were available, like electives that really kind of gave you real world experience as a lawyer, which is something that law school is seriously lacking. Most law school curriculum is just, they teach you the law. They don't teach you how to be a lawyer. So but Toro did a really good job of offering those type of classes. And that's definitely something that I enjoyed.
Well, I got to tell you, this is super cool to learn about. And then I got to ask, and I don't want to, you know, trigger you here. What is the LSAT like? What was it like to study for that? What is that test like?
The LSAT was awful. most people who have taken it will say it's completely irrelevant to not only your potential skill as a lawyer, but, you know, being a lawyer in general. And while I mostly agree with that, it does incorporate some critical thinking. You know, it is a very time sensitive test from what I remember, like the bar exam is. So at least you get that kind of in the forefront of your mind. You have to be very quick on the test. The logic games that were extremely frustrating, anyone who has taken it, I'm sure will agree, you know, logic games. If you don't know what a logic game is for the LSAT, I would advise you looking it up and trying to do one, because they're kind of cool on paper, but they're frustrating because you know there's a right answer. And you can't, if you don't set out the formula or the situation right, you're screwed, basically. It was, studying for it was difficult. Studying for it, you know, my senior year of college, you obviously have, you know, your regular schoolwork going on. You have your senior year of college going on, which is, you want to be more lively and kind of, you know, live it up your last year before you go to law school and really start the adult part of your life. And then you have this big test that's kind of hanging over your head for a couple months. So it was definitely a challenge. I did not do as great on the LSAT as I would have liked, but you know, here we are today, and that's, you know, hindsight's 2020. So no regrets at all, but it's a very challenging and possibly irrelevant test for.
Well that, you know, I try to weave in life lessons into the show. And I think something that you just spoke about is that, you know, just because, you know, you might not score well on a test, or you might not do well in like the system, the way it's structured, doesn't mean you can't do well in the real world. I mean, you've been an exceptional attorney for your clients, delivering settlements and results for them. You know, they don't teach you that in the LSAT. And that's kind of what I want to weave into. So you walk into your firm, you're a lawyer, you got your briefcase, your suit, your tie. What was that like on your first day? And what's it been like to be an attorney so young?
Well, I actually interned at the firm I'm currently at my final year of law school. So I kind of, and you know, once when I started my internship, I had already accepted a postgraduate, you know, offer or position here. So I was kind of, on my first day, I was kind of still the intern, still learning how to, you know, work the copy machine and, you know, figuring out the online software system that we use and everything. And so I was kind of starting to learn, and I was shadowing some of the attorneys here, going to court with them when it was open. But, you know, shortly after I graduated and was admitted. I was admitted in January 2020. I received my own caseload in the very beginning of March of 2020. And then, as you know, 2 weeks later, the entire world shut down. But from the time I was admitted up until, you know, mid-March, I was in court almost every single day. I was starting to get used to, you know, the procedure when you get to court, who you got to speak to, you know, where you sign up, or, you know, sign your name in, sign in, and stuff like that. And then the entire world shut down. I've been to court, you know, maybe a dozen times since then. Everything's moved over to virtual. So not only did I have to kind of learn the virtual court procedure, but I had my entire caseload for the first time of my career, you know, when I was working from home. Now, I didn't have the easy accessibility for my, you know, my colleagues here and my bosses to be able to pop into their office and, you know, pick their brains on certain stuff. Obviously they're available by phone and they were great, you know, kind of making sure I was okay. And if I had any questions, I'd call them up and, you know, we had long conversations over the phone. But, you know, being back in the office, which I've been back in the office now for almost a year since the second phase opened up on Long Island. I definitely miss being in the courthouse and being, you know, walking in a suit and tie every day. It was definitely an adventure in the beginning and a roller coaster.
So take us through that day by day pre-COVID, because, you know, people, you know, we see it on TV, you know, what was it like to be in that, you know, to be in the courtroom? I mean, so many of us, you know, don't know what that's like, you know, what was that like?
It's definitely different than you see on TV.
Okay.
You know, most of these cases that we handle, you know, don't go to trial. They either, you know, the criminal cases get pled out, or the civil cases, you know, they either resolve through motion practice, through discovery, or they eventually get settled. But there are certainly some cases, and we kind of pride ourselves here on, you know, taking cases at trial, you know, when there's no good offer made by the defense. But what most of the court appearances are conferences on the cases. You go in, you kind of go in front of the judge, you set out discovery deadlines, timelines to do depositions, things like that. And, you know, and it's not instantaneous. I would bring books to the courthouse. I would bring my laptop. I would bring other work to do, paperwork, because you could be there for some time, especially in the city courthouses that are very packed and very, you know, you feel like cogs in a wheel, kind of, you know, in a big machine when you're in a courthouse, you know, a giant courtroom with hundreds of other lawyers all trying to do exactly what you're doing. You kind of got to wait in line for it. You know, that part, being virtual is nice. You know, you have a scheduled conference at a scheduled time, you jump on and you do a 10 or 15 minute Zoom conference, and then you're still at your desk and can get more work done. But pre-COVID, yeah, it was an adventure, and it's been an adventure ever since. And you learn something new every day, and I'm still learning here.
Well, I love that attitude, by the way, of being a lifelong learner and never, never believing that we're done learning. Here it is. You go to law school, you take the LSAT, you become an attorney. Like, there's still so much more to do. So I think that attitude is great. What I want to ask you about, and I think this is pretty cool, is that, a number of your clients are kids we went to high school with. You know, who are some of the people you represent, and who are some of your clients? And then second follow-up to that is like what, you know, who do you represent in this industry? And you know, for our viewers who would want to interact with the legal system, I think it's cool to have an attorney who is young and who understands what it's like to be young and not have that intimate knowledge of the system. I think you actually probably put them at ease. So who are some of your clients, and then who do you represent?
Sure. Well, first I'll speak about the firm and kind of the general firm clientele. As you know my boss, Bill Farrow, who's current president of the school board for Jericho. He developed a not-for-profit kind of brand or affiliate of the firm called Liga de Justicia, which is, you know, Justice League in Spanish. And the firm kind of markets and does community events for the low income, Hispanic communities on Long Island. And, you know, so we have a lot of Hispanic clientele from those communities that we either get through the events, through marketing, through our radio show, through the magazine, you know, a number of different ways. Me personally, why I kind of started Kyle the Lawyer is I not only wanted to educate my network of followers on what I do on a daily basis and our successes here, but, you know, once you become attorney, you get asked questions about just about everything, you know, not necessarily in the field that you practice in. I'm a personal injury attorney, and I've gotten asked to write wills a couple times. So I wanted to kind of create a forum where I can answer some of the common or frequently asked questions that I get about, you know, DUIs, about what I should do when I'm in a car accident, about, you know, do I need an attorney if I get a traffic ticket, type of thing. And it's been, you know, it launched recently, and I've had, you know, pretty good success with it. And, you know, I've gotten a couple clients. I've actually had the Kyle the Lawyer kind of Instagram going since I was admitted, and it just, you know, officially launched the website. And like you said, you know, some of my clients have been guys we went to high school with, people we knew from high school, which is kind of exactly what I'm looking for. I'm not trying to get Joe Schmo off the street who sees my billboard and gives me a call. I just wanted to kind of be there in case, you know, someone we went to high school with, maybe someone's mom we went to high school with is in a car accident. And, you know, they know that they have my cell phone number, they have my, you know, information, they've known me since high school or before that, and they can kind of easily reach out and kind of trust me. And that's kind of the whole purpose behind the Kyle the Lawyer Instagram page, website, and all that. It's been great so far, and I really look forward to kind of building it and continuing to provide not only success stories about what we do here, but answering, you know, kind of questions I get on a daily basis about different aspects of what I do.
Well, let's dive deeper, because, you know, social media is now becoming non-negotiable for people who want to grow businesses and platforms. So can you take us like as a layperson, like through literally what you do? Because, I mean, you do a lot of video content, a lot of online content. Can you kind of take us through how you built Kyle the Lawyer and kind of how you're using that platform to grow? Because a lot of people just just don't know. Like it's a complicated process, and being a digital native, I'm sure it's easier for you, but I'm sure you had to figure this stuff out too.
Yeah. It really started when I was an intern at two different personal injury firms when I was in law school. You know, I saw that they were starting to utilize social media to promote themselves. You know, they weren't doing commercials. They were kind of just you know, answering frequently asked questions, or, you know, highlighting a post about a success story, you know, a recently big settlement or a recent big motion victory that they had. And, you know, the firm page would do it. And then the individual employees, attorneys, you know, paralegals or law clerks would kind of share that post on their personal feed. And I work closely with a couple of attorneys who have gotten good cases, you know, good referrals from, you know, resharing this type of page. So, and I saw a kind of disconnect or a big gap between, you know, the big, you know, well-known firms that you always think of when you see billboards or hear a jingle, and the social media aspect. You know, the advertisement industry for this area has been pretty similar for the last, you know, 30, 40 years, billboards, radio, you know, commercials, TV commercials, stuff like that. And we've been seeing a growth in the social media advertising, you know, especially obviously as social media has grown. And I figured, you know, why not try to jump on that train, get ahead of the curve, and being a millennial and someone who's familiar with the use of social media, try to, you know, use my kind of background to promote myself. So I've had kind of a lawyer, like I said, since I was in my third year of law school, creating the page kind of for this purpose. And, you know, just trying to, most of it I was able to do on my own, or at least craft the content behind it. Obviously, you know, I'm writing the blogs, I'm writing the captions and stuff. The graphic design, I not my specialty. I had to reach out to someone actually we went to high school with, and I'm working with someone, you know, we went to high school with, who I just kind of saw him posting his work on social media. And that's, you know, how I became a client of his. So I've been working with him over the last, you know, 6 months or so to kind of develop, you know, frequently asked question videos, templates to use, you know, when I get a good testimonial or have a successful outcome, and, you know, produce that. I hate to call it a commercial, but that's kind of what it's referred to as, like a kind of, you know, announcement, debut launch commercial that's on the website and, you know, it's on my social media pages. And kind of taking it from there, you know, this is certainly a field that I'm still learning how to do, and being consistent with it is almost more important than always being right or always posting the best stuff. You know, getting content out there and getting it out there on a consistent basis is extremely important and something that I'm definitely looking forward to doing.
Well, I love that. And likewise, because, you know, I saw that you represent a lot of kids who went to high school with, and a lot of young people who perhaps, you know, don't have, again, that intimate knowledge with the legal system. So someone gets in a car accident, what do they do? Like, you know, what's their next step? Because I get these practical questions all the time in terms of life. And we just had a new driver seminar. So like, what happens?
Yeah, you know, it's one of my favorite parts about doing what I do is I kind of work in the, I like to call them tangible fields of practice of law. You know, I'm not doing the $1 billion mergers and acquisitions that are kind of unrealistic to most people. I do, you know, all types of accidents, but specifically car accidents, you know, DUIs and traffic cases. And everybody knows someone who has been, you know, affected by a traffic ticket, or you've been in a car accident. You know, I know, you know, you've been in a car accident, and yep. We've all had family members who have been in car accidents. You know, thank God you weren't seriously injured. And, you know, I don't hope for anyone to be seriously injured. But, you know, everyone is affected by this type of line of work. So what you should do if you're in a car accident, you know, obviously the most important thing is to check up on not only yourself, but anyone else who's in your vehicle, make sure you guys are all hopefully okay. The kind of second step is to immediately call 911. You know, if it's a super minor fender bender and you're completely okay and everyone's completely okay, maybe you want to deal with that outside of insurance, but I would definitely advise, you know, to call 911, get the police there. They'll fill out a police accident report, kind of taking down your information, the other driver's information, insurance information, kind of a brief description of the accident. Also something that I highly recommend, which is surprisingly not done as often as you would think, is to take pictures of the damage to your vehicle, take pictures of the damage to the other vehicles involved in the accident, kind of where they ended up, you know, after the accident, after the impacts. These pictures will help prove not only the severity of the accident, if there's significant damage to the vehicles, but it'll also help prove points of impact and can help us as lawyers and potentially an expert in accident reconstructionist opine as to how the accident occurred, which in every case, you need to prove both liability, which is, you know, who's responsible for the accident, and damages, or, you know, how badly were you injured and how much should you be awarded compensation wise for your injuries. So, you know, pictures of vehicles, you know, the damage of vehicles, property damage, pictures are extremely important. And finally, you definitely want to talk with the police. You know, a lot of people might be scared to talk to police if they think they're at fault for causing the accident, or if they know they're not an experienced driver. But you definitely want to speak with the police and give your version of how the accident happened. You know, maybe, you know, someone cut you off while you were driving and you had to swerve to avoid hitting them when you caused an accident on the side, type of thing. You know, there could be some reasonable excuse for causing the accident where, you know, you wouldn't be held responsible, but obviously no one's going to know that unless you talk with the police and kind of can make sure that that gets in the police report. And then finally, you know, if you are injured, seek medical treatment and, you know, give either myself or some other personal injury attorney a call. They'll help, you know, you from day one dealing with the insurance companies, you know, getting you paid or getting your vehicle fixed, or you pay for your vehicle. If you're out of work, we can get lost wages in the beginning, and then, you know, potentially filing a lawsuit on your behalf to get you compensation for your injuries.
I got to tell you, it's convenient to know a lawyer, because I'm taking notes here as you speak. And, you know, listen, full disclosure, as a close friend of yours, I'm just so proud of you. But I really appreciate that knowledge that you're giving. And, you know, truly my hope is people reach out to you. When someone needs legal help, they do a consultation with you, you know, so like, let's say someone gets in an accident, someone needs help, you know, they call you, you know, what happens then?
Completely free consultations. The firm does, you know, completely free consultations. We'll do, you know, lately with COVID, we've been trying to limit the amount of people we have actually in the office. So what I've been doing a lot is, you know, consultations over the phone. We'll somehow get in contact with you. I'll probably give you a call if you reach out to me via social media. And we'll just discuss, you know, the general facts of the case at first, you know, kind of tell me what happened. Tell me, you know, are you injured? Are you starting to feel pain? How long ago was the accident? You know, have you been seeing doctors? Do you want to go see doctors, type of thing? And then from there, the next steps are, you know, doing a formal intake, which I've been able to do over the phone and just send you some paperwork for you to sign in the mail, you know, with things, the guidelines kind of, you know, loosening up and us being able to move more freely in, you know, society today. I always want to meet with someone face to face. I always want to sit down with you, and I always want to explain the, you know, the timeline of the case, the lack of guarantee in any case. The first questions I get is, you know, when is this going to resolve, and how much money am I going to get? And to be honest, those questions are extremely difficult to answer in the beginning of a case, if not impossible. And any lawyer who will answer those questions in the beginning of a case is kind of full of BS. But we've been doing formal intakes over the phone, formal intakes in person, and kind of I'll walk you through the beginning steps of a case. You know, we'll set up a no-fault insurance claim so you can get your medical bills paid for through the no-fault insurance and get any potential lost wages paid through the no-fault insurance. And most people don't even know no-fault insurance exists, which I can, you know, obviously go into more depth on if you want me to, but it's a, you know,
very important. Why not?
Sure. No-fault insurance is insurance that is in every single car insurance, kind of, it's a part of every single car insurance. You know, unfortunately, there are cases where people are driving around without car insurance, but no-fault, like the name kind of suggests, it will pay up to $50,000 of medical bills, of lost wages, if you need to hire help around the house because you're not able to do, you know, the cooking, cleaning, and household chores, they'll pay for that sometimes. They will pay for other different things, you know, medical devices that you need, things like that, up to $50,000 limit. And that's there no matter what. But you need to set up that claim within 30 days of the accident occurring. So that's why it's, you know, extremely important for you to contact an attorney, because the insurance company obviously wants to save money after an accident. They're not going to reach out to you. They're not going to make you aware that the insurance even exists. So that's what this insurance is. It'll pay for a lot of different kinds of things up to a certain limit. And, you know, it doesn't affect any kind of personal injury or injury claim that comes out of the case, you know, so you might as well use it while it's there and, you know, treat under it, get medical treatment under it, you know, because it's there kind of, you know, for that purpose. But what a lot of people don't understand is the caveat that comes along with this insurance being there. The way the insurance companies agreed to this is in the 70s when the no-fault insurance law first took place, is now in order to sue for personal injuries, you know, kind of get it outside the no-fault realm, you need to have what's called a serious injury under the no-fault insurance law. So it makes it personal injury cases a little bit more difficult to get compensation on. It makes my job a little bit more challenging, but I'm always up for the challenge and always, you know, looking to get my clients as much money as possible, you know, to fully compensate them for their injuries.
You are amazing. I got to tell you, you are like an encyclopedia of knowledge, and we could talk all day, but this is the perfect place to wrap. And I'm going to ask you the last question, which I ask every single guest on this show. You've learned so much. You have grown so much. Your haircut is very sophisticated now. It wasn't all, you know, you're a real big shot lawyer over here. What is the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self, knowing all that you do now? The biggest piece of advice that you would give to your younger self?
The biggest piece of advice that I would give to my younger self would be to, you know, really find and latch on to good mentors. You know, having a mentor, really, no matter what field or industry you're in or what type of job or career you want to do, you learn more from a good mentor than you'll ever really learn from school. That's, you know, my honest opinion of it. And I've learned more, you know, following good lawyers around, whether it's, you know, people I've worked with or social media or taking a CLE or continuing legal education classes, finding someone to kind of pick their brain on different situations who will show you the ropes, show you, you know, the stuff you don't learn in school. Definitely finding a good mentor and learning and being a sponge when you're with them, you know, not going through the motions at a summer internship because you know it's, you know, probably not going to lead to a job, but taking that experience and really learning from it and learning as much as you can and volunteering for different types of situations that way you might be, you know, challenging yourself, but you'll challenge when you're challenged, you know, you grow. That's where growth comes from. You know, adversity is where growth comes from, putting yourself in challenging situations you're not comfortable with and learning how to become comfortable with uncomfortable situations. You know, for me personally, public speaking was never one of my fortes. I really didn't like doing presentations and public speaking in, you know, in high school. I took a couple classes in college that were public speaking was, you know, the whole purpose of the class. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm a great public speaker now, but I definitely am more comfortable, you know, speaking publicly in front of people, whether it's virtual or in person. You know, getting out of your comfort zones, finding a good mentor, and really, you know, applying yourself and being a sponge when you're in these situations would be the advice that I'd give my younger self and anyone who is potentially listening to this.
It's a perfect place to wrap. I couldn't agree more. My mentors have changed my life, and I continue to try to give back to the next generation like you do through Kyle the Lawyer. I will tell you, you know, we don't make official endorsements on this show, but I will tell you that you are an exceptional person and attorney, and I think any of your clients would be in good hands from a compassion standpoint and from a legal standpoint. So thanks for all you do for all the people in our communities. I look forward to seeing you soon, and on behalf of all of us at Java with Josh, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Josh. Look forward to, you know, the next time we speak or see each other, the next thing, you know, event that we could work together.
We'll do the next one, a hurricane. Thanks so much for tuning in. And thank you to Kyle J. McLaughlin for an amazing conversation. Make sure to click subscribe to our podcast and check us out on Instagram and Facebook for videos and bonus features. I'd also love to hear your questions and comments. Please feel free to shoot me an email at josh@joshlafazan.com. I'm legislator Josh Lafazan, and thanks for joining us for Java with Josh.